How does a person get to that point? The only way to get to that point is through practice. That means anytime you see somebody doing something questionable, you immediately have to try to think up of some explanation for what they're doing, ridiculous as it may be, as it may seem, right? I told you yesterday, the bus driver closes the door on you. Immediately assume, after the bus driver closed the door, immediately assume he probably didn't see me, right? Or he's probably having a hard day. It certainly was not with malicious intent. Look, if you see the bus driver go, chuck up another one, right? Then obviously you don't have an obligation. There's nothing to judge him favorably over there. Obviously, then you can start thinking, well, obviously he was raised a certain way. That's why he's so mean. You try to find some type of explanation for his behavior, even if it seems ridiculous. It's the only way to condition one's mind to constantly automatically shift into a favorable judging mode, okay? So the first thing you have to do is practice, even if it's illogical, right? Even if it seems ridiculous. Let's say you lose your wallet. A person loses their wallet, where do you look for it? Right? You look for your wallet in all the illogical places. When your wallet is lost and there's a lot of money, you don't stop and think to yourself, well, why should I look in my brother's closet? I haven't been in my brother's room for the last 4 years, right? Why would I look for my wallet in his closet? You go, you're desperate, you're trying to find it, you're desperate, you go looking in the closet. You look in all the illogical places. When you're trying to find a merit for somebody, you're trying to find some benefit for something somebody's done, then you pull out all the punches. You have to look even what we would call the illogical places. You have to try to think of some type of illogical explanation for what the person has been doing. Pirkei Avos says, Pirkei Avos warns judges, have a misunim badin. You must be deliberate in judgment. Right? That's a warning to judges that judges, before passing judgment in law, in court, judges have an obligation to think things over carefully and slowly before they issue a halachic ruling. Somebody who's judging other people, commentaries in Pirkei Avos say that is referring to every individual. Each one of us is a judge dozens, if not hundreds of times a day, and each one of us has an obligation before we condemn and before we pass judgment. We must think things over carefully. Well, I just wrote down here a few stories of all subjects. This subject, the stories that you hear sometimes illustrate the point better than anything else. The first story happened to me. I was studying in this yeshiva many, many years ago, right? And we were in the Beis Medrash in the morning. And there was one fellow who, anyway, I didn't particularly care for this guy. That's usually how these things are. I didn't particularly care for this guy. And at the end of morning davening, I saw him at Aleinu. We started saying Aleinu L'Shabeach, and I was davening at Aleinu. Some people think the words Aleinu L'Shabeach mean let's take off our tefillin now. Right? That's when people start saying Aleinu L'Shabeach, let's take off our tefillin now. And people start taking off their tefillin. Right? So here we started Aleinu L'Shabeach, and we were yeshiva boys. There's no reason to rush to davening. We started Aleinu, and here's this guy's taking off his tefillin. Right, and continue the davening. After Aleinu, he's already heading out of the shul. Right, and I knew this guy, and I figured, why is he in such a hurry? He's got to be at breakfast first before anybody else. Right? Why can't he be like the rest of us righteous tzaddikim and stay in davening till the end? Right? And here I am finishing my davening, consumed with anger, of course, righteous indignation about this individual who's neglecting his duties to God. You notice your righteous indignation is always involved somebody who you didn't like anyway. So I'm thinking to myself, now why is it that this person, why does he have to leave? I'm hungry also, why can't I? Usually when we get upset with other people, by the way, it's human nature. You see a flaw in somebody else, it's usually because that's what we'd like to be doing. Right? We'd like to be doing the same thing, right? It irks me because I would really like to rip off my tefillin and run to breakfast too. If I've got to exert a little self-control, why can't he? And here I was absolutely sure that what he was doing was improper. So I finished my davening. Obviously, I got to the throne of glory. I had direct communication with God. And I put my tefillin away. And as I was walking out of the shul, I see that in the back of the Beis Medrash, here's this guy is standing there with the charity cup. Right? And he's in the back of the shul collecting charity so that everybody who leaves davening can drop a coin into his cup. Right? So I had him condemned. And in fact, what he was doing was what's considered one of the top mitzvahs that is possible for a human being to be doing. He is collecting charity and he's getting other people to give, right? That's number one. There was a couple living in a certain city that had moved into the town, and an elderly couple befriended them, right? A Shomer Shabbos, an observant, an Orthodox young couple. They moved to this town, an elderly couple befriended them, and one of the early Shabbosim that they were there, this elderly couple came to their house and paid them a social visit, right? So they're finished with the visit, and they're talking to the man. The man says, well, surely Davin's that, and all his children are religious and go to day school. They finish their conversation, and this elderly couple leaves, right? So one husband walks over to the window as they walk out the door. He looks down at the street, and he sees that this couple is getting into a cab, right? It's the middle of Shabbos, and they're getting into a taxi, right? And they drive off. So he turns to his wife, and he says, you know what? We've been conned, right? These people have taken us into their confidence, right? And the fact remains that they're not Shabbos observant. I really don't want to have anything to do with it, right? And the wife says, you're absolutely right. And again, righteous indignation, they have nothing to do with this couple. Several months later, they hear the news that this elderly man passed away. Right? Well, they don't want to have anything to do. They don't go to the funeral. They don't want to have anything to do. Finally, on the last day of the Shiva period, they decide, you know, after all, you know, it is a mitzvah to go and comfort the mourners. We should really go over there and comfort. So they go to the house, and they walk in, and they see the widow is there, and they sit down, and it's a little uncomfortable because they haven't seen them in months, right? They've abruptly cut off the relationship, and they're sitting there. And finally, the wife, you know, started crying. She says, well, you know, what was it your husband died from? She says, well, he had a heart attack. She said, oh, really? Did he have a history of heart trouble? She says, well, as a matter of fact, his history goes back about 6 months. Actually, when we were leaving your house, that Shabbos, that was the first time he felt the symptoms of a heart attack. And because he's a physician, he knew enough to hail the nearest cab and get into cab. We went from your house straight to the hospital. Right? Absolutely not only permissible, but absolutely mandatory on Shabbos. One of the righteous tzaddikim, there's a man called the Ksav Sofer. Have you heard of the Chassam Sofer, the Chatam Sofer? Right? He was one of the leading halachic authorities. He had a son named the Ksav Sofer. They were always named by the book which they've written. The Ksav Sofer was the leading rabbi in Pressburg, and he summoned together a major rabbinic conference, right? So there was a rabbinic conference where you had all these rabbis and all these Torah scholars got together for a very important rabbinic conference. Now, at this rabbinic conference, the Ksav Sofer had a surprise for everybody. He said to the people, everybody seated, the guests are there, they're serving the meal. And he said, gentlemen, I would like to show you something. He reaches into his pocket and he pulls out a coin. He says, this coin is a coin that dates back to the time of the temple. It's the machatzis shekel, the half shekel coin, which was used during the time of the temple period. And this is the only one of its type that's known to exist. I'd like everybody to take a look at it right now. Ooh, ah, right. Everybody's gasping, and they pass this coin around, and everybody's looking at the coin, right? Short time later, Ksav Sofer turns to the guy next to him and he says, do you have the coin? He says, no, I gave it to him. Do you have the coin? Right? They're trying to look for the coin. The coin's disappeared. Nobody knows where the coin is. This one gave it to this one. The coin has disappeared. Right? So they're all sitting there at the table. Everybody's looking for the coin. Finally, somebody gets up and says, you know what? We should all empty our pockets out. Everybody should empty their pockets out in public to make sure that we see that nobody has the coin in their pocket. Right? So one old man in the back immediately steps and says, no, I object to emptying out the pockets. All eyes to, oh... Right? And then the guy says again, right, I say everybody should empty out their pockets. The old man says, no, I don't want to empty out my pockets. Right? I think that we should wait 10 minutes and let's look for the coin or in the room. So the Ksav Sofer says, no. The old man asks, we'll wait for 10 minutes. They wait for 10 minutes. There's still no coin. Finally, the other guy says, come on, let's empty out. Enough of this. Let's empty out the pockets and he should start first. So the old man says, look, give me another 10 minutes. If we don't find the coin in 10 minutes, then I'll empty my pockets first. But I object to having them empty out pockets in public. Right? And everybody's, you know, obviously, you know, come on, old man. You're wasting everybody's time. Ksav Sofer says, the old man made a request. We'll wait 10 minutes for the old man. About 5 minutes later, they hear some noise, a tumult in the kitchen. And one of the servants comes out and says, we found the coin. Somebody accidentally threw the coin out into the garbage. Right? Somebody accidentally threw out this half-shekel coin. It was in the garbage. So everybody turns to the old man. It's okay, old man, now we have the coin back. Now what was your problem? Like, why didn't you want to empty your pocket? So the old man says, look, I refused to empty my pocket. What did you assume? So one of the guys says, well, obviously we assume that you've taken the coin. So the old man says, okay, you know what? Now I'm going to empty my pocket. He sticks his hand in his pocket he pulls out a replica of the coin that the Ksav Sofer has been passing around. The old man says, look, I came to this meeting and I expected to be able to show off my coin. When I saw that the Ksav Sofer had the identical coin, and he was so happy, thinking that it's the only one that existed, I decided I'll let him bask in the glory. I'm going to keep mine in my pocket for the time being. What would have happened when that coin was missing? If I would have emptied out my pocket and this coin would have fallen out of my pocket, what would you have thought? Right? There isn't a person in this room who would have assumed that I happen to have the second similar coin like that in the world. Right? Therefore, I didn't want to empty out my pocket. But you see, he said to everybody, you see how important it is to give everybody the benefit of the doubt. The old man had another coin, yeah. The old man had another coin. And these situations come up all the time in life where people are situations where you would have expected, you would never have expected in a million years, then somebody pulls it out. There's a cute story with Reb Levi Yitzchak from, it's a Hasidish tale, so I don't know how accurate, how true it is, but it's a cute story. It makes the point nicely nonetheless. Reb Levi Yitzchak from Berditchev is one of the classic personalities in history. He was always looking to judge the Jewish people favorably. Like Rabbi Levi Yitzchak, the story goes, he saw a man in shul, right? And the man had his tefillin on, he's sitting in the back of the shul, and he's reading a newspaper. So Rabbi Levi Yitzchak turns his eyes heavenward and says, you see, Almighty, even while they read newspapers, they wear tefillin. Right? That's the, I'll say it again. Even while, you didn't get that. Right? He was always finding, that was, do you understand that? He was always finding a merit, no matter how questionable the behavior, he always found merit in the Jewish people. So that story was rated, it was rated about an 8.5, by the way. It was classic. Reb Levi Yitzchak, there was once a man in his town that died. Right? A certain man in Reb Levi Yitzchak's town died. Now this man was known as a miser. So the people of the town decided that they're not interested in really attending this guy's funeral because this guy, after all, was a miser. So the day of the funeral comes, and everybody looks outside, and they see that at the funeral, there's Rabbi Levi Yitzchak, the leader of the people. Right? He's attending, he's in the funeral procession. So if you see Rabbi Levi Yitzchak at the funeral, you don't ask any questions. You got to participate also. So all the townspeople, one at a time, they all come out, and eventually this man has this massive funeral. Right? Finally, the man is buried. The man who's got the reputation of being a miser is buried. And the people come to Rabbi Levi Yitzchak afterwards and say, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak, can you tell us something? Why is it that you felt it necessary to attend his funeral considering that this man is a miser? So Rabbi Levi Yitzchak says, let me tell you something about this man which maybe you don't know. This man appeared in rabbinic court in front of me. He appeared three times. All three times he lost. But let me tell you what happened. There were three court cases involving this man. The first one took place many years ago. A man came to town, and this man came to town because he had to marry off his daughter. And he was looking to buy some merchandise in our town. He came to town with the 10,000 rubles. And he was walking through the town, and suddenly there was a tremendous tumult and a commotion. This man lost his wallet. Right? It was his entire life savings, 10,000 rubles, and he needed this money to marry off his daughter. So, there he was in the town square making this tremendous tumult because he lost his wallet, and everybody gathered around him, they tried to console him, and he was crying, and eventually he passed out, he was so upset. Finally he woke up, they brought him to, and this miser comes over to him, and he says to him, you know, what's the problem? He says, I lost my wallet. He says, how much money was in your wallet? He says, there was 10,000 rubles in it. He says, I think I found your wallet. I'll be back in a half hour. He goes home, comes back, and he gives the man a wallet with 10,000 rubles in it. Right? The man looks at him. He says, thank you very much. I really, you saved me. You've saved my entire family. Thank you very much. I don't know how I could ever thank you. Whoa, hold on a second. Hold on a second. Just one second. My 10,000 rubles was made up of 50s and 100s. You've got some 20s and 10s in here. This is not my money, right? I appreciate what you're trying to do, but this is not my money. And the man says, ah, 50s, 20s, 10s, what's the difference? 10,000 rubles, 10,000 rubles is your money. You lost the money, I found the money, this is your money. The man says, I'm not going to take money, I'm not going to take charity. They went to Reb Levi Yitzchak. He said, I'm taking you to court, right? Interesting court case. They went to Reb Levi Yitzchak. Reb Levi Yitzchak says, what's the problem? He said, this man's insisting on giving me a wallet, which is not mine, right? He says, Reb Levi Yitzchak, what's the difference? Money's money. Reb Levi says, listen, Mr. Miser, I appreciate what you're trying to do. The halacha is against you. You cannot force a man to take money that does not belong to him, right? A second case. There was a man living in Bardichev. This man was very poor. And he told his wife, listen, Edna, we can't make ends meet. I'm going to have to leave town, and I'm going to have to try find, maybe I could find my fortune in distant pastures, right? He says, Edna, I'm going to have to leave. So Edna says to him, yeah, but what about the family? How are you going to support us? He said, don't worry about anything. I made an arrangement with Yankel the Miser. You go to his house once a week, and Yankel the Miser is going to provide you with your needs for the week. No arrangement had been made, right? You just go, don't worry about it, Yankel the Miser will take care of everything, and the man leaves town. Well, the first Sunday comes, wife doesn't have any food for her or the kids. She goes over to this Yankel the Miser, and she says to Yankel, she walks in, and she says, hello, secretary's there. She says, can you tell Yankel that Mrs. Goldberg is here? The secretary tells him, yes, I don't know any Mrs. Goldberg. I says, what do you mean you don't know any Mrs. Goldberg? My husband said they made an arrangement with you. She gets in to see him. He says, what would you like? He says, well, my husband left town, and he said that you made the arrangement with him that you're going to support the family. I want the money right now. He says, oh, yes, of course, that arrangement. Right, right, right. How many kids are there? Five kids? Right, right. And he writes out every week. For 2 years, he hands her a stack of rubles so she could support her family. Finally, after 2 years, her husband comes home. He pulls up in this fabulous chariot. He's done quite well out in the greener pastures, and he comes back to town, and he gets to his house. He's a little wary of what he's going to find. And there's his wife, well-dressed, in a good mood. The children are in a good mood, well-dressed. He comes into the house and says, what's been going on? She says, hi, I'm home. Hi, yeah, it worked out well. Starts talking, says, what was it, what money did you use, you know, while I was gone? I said, well, remember you told me the arrangement with Yankel the Miser, right? It worked out perfectly. The man heads straight for Yankel the Miser. He says, hi, Yankel, I'm back. I made a calculation, 50 rubles times 100 weeks, which is what I've been going. Here's the money that I owe you. Thank you very much for taking care of my family. And I said, sorry. You know, I gave the money with the full heart. I didn't expect any type of repayment of the money. Under no circumstances will I accept the money. The man says, what do you mean? I don't need charity. Thank God I can pay for it. And they get into an argument. Din Torah. Let's go to Reb Levi Yitzchak. Reb Levi Yitzchak says, Yankel, the Torah rules against you. You cannot force somebody to accept charity money if they don't want to accept charity money. He turns to the people. He says, that's the second story. The third story was a man who came to Yankel the Miser for a loan. He said to Yankel the Miser, Yankel, I need to borrow 2,000 rubles. And Yankel said, well, I could lend you the money, but who's your guarantor? And he said, I need a guarantor. On a loan, if I could give you a big loan, I need a guarantor. The man says to the Yankel, Hashem is my guarantor. Right? Hashem is my guarantor. He's the guarantor that I'll pay back the loan. So Yankel says, fine, and he gives the man the loan. The man leaves, and he comes back 3 months later. He says, Yankel, I've come to repay the loan. Right? Here's the 2,000 rubles. Yankel says, sorry, the guarantor has already repaid the loan. So what do you mean the guarantor has repaid the loan? Right? I said, I took the loan. Sorry, Hashem paid me back. You're completely free of the loan. I'm taking you to Din Torah. Come to Levi Yitzchak. Levi says, Yankel, sorry, you cannot force somebody to keep the money. He has the right to repay you. He turns to the people. He says, you see, he came to me 3 times in Din Torah. You had assumed a personality a certain way, and the truth of the matter is that his personality was completely different. You didn't know the first thing about him, and therefore it should be a lesson to you all to judge him favorably. The last story I'll tell you, when I saw this story, I read this in a book, there's a book called The Magid Speak. When I read this in a book, I got the goosebumps from it. There's a guy in a town who had to marry off his daughter. So when it comes to marrying off children, there are major expenses, and he was having trouble making the expenses. So all the local neighbors, everybody in the city, helped pitch in to make this guy the wedding, right? Everybody gave him some money to help him make the wedding. Finally, the invitations arrive, and they're invited to a certain hotel. Now, this hotel has the grand ballroom, and it has certain little side rooms. Standard place that people make, and everybody, as soon as they've got the invitation, very nice, they're expecting to walk into one of the side rooms in the hotel. They get to the hotel, Goldberg Schwartz wedding, third floor, main ballroom, right? people are a little shocked, right? Here's the man that they've helped him. He couldn't afford it financially. They've been giving him money in order to make a wedding, right? Everybody goes up to the main ballroom. They see the main ballroom is set with only the finest of caterers' cutlery. They begin bringing out the food, right? Only the best, ribeye steak, and all the best cuts of meat with a sweet table to end all sweet tables, and a massive wedding that had to cost more than the wealthiest weddings, right? And the people at the wedding were very, very hurt. They felt, again, that they'd been conned, and they couldn't believe that such a man who was thought of as an honest man, a man of integrity, a mainstream, a pillar of the community, would take the entire community for the ride. The entire community started giving him the silent treatment. People couldn't talk to him. They saw him in the streets, and they couldn't talk to him. Finally, the rabbi of the shul called him in. He said to me, "Tell me something." You know, the man comes, the rabbi says, "You know, people are very upset with you." He says, "Yeah, Rabbi, I know that." He says, "Can you please explain to me? Really, I'm having trouble myself dealing with this because, after all, I was involved in the drive to raise money for you. How can you do such a thing? What happened? How can you possibly do such a thing?" He said, "Let me tell you. We met with the caterer, and we fully intended to have the plainest meal possible in one of the small rooms. We weren't even sure we wanted to use this hotel. The caterer asked me my name, so I told her my last name. And she said to me, 'Did you have any relatives in Germany?' So I said, 'Yeah, well, you know, there's a certain Yankel Kagan living in Germany.' She says, 'Is it Yankel Kagan that lived there?' And I said, 'Yeah, that was my father.' She said, 'Well, let me tell you something. Your father is responsible for us being alive today. Your father hid us during the war. He helped us to get out of Germany. I owe my life to your father. I'm going to make you the most fabulous wedding possible, and I'm not going to charge you for any of it.'" Right? And the caterer pulled out the whole thing, all on the caterer, right? The rabbi got up in the shul, and he publicly made an announcement in the shul so that everybody should be aware of what it was they had done, right? Then on Judgment Day, we come before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we're going to be asking, believe me, we're going to be groveling, because we think in this world, when we do averas, and or we're involved in questionable behavior, we think to ourselves, well, you know, Hashem understands, right? Or on the judgment day, I'm going to tell him this, that, and the other thing, and he'll say this, and then I'll say this, and I'll explain everything away. That's what we're saying right now. On judgment day, it's not going to work that. On judgment day, we're going to be confronted by the truth of our actions. We're going to be speechless. Therefore, we need all the help we can get. So the mitzvah of judging favorably is a benefit to us, not only in this world, but a benefit for our eternal existence. Okay? Tomorrow, we're going to do the shir on honoring parents, right? This is one of the most important shir we're going to be doing. Yeah.
Shouldn't he have announced
what is Zimmerot
songs?
Zimmerot means songs?
I don't know Marasayan, but certainly the other principle of being clean.
That's what it means.
Of maintaining a clean reputation, right? He's not doing anything prohibited, right? But it is behavior that's questionable. It probably should have at least let everybody know that I got a freebie on this one.
But then we wouldn't have had a story.
Then you wouldn't have had a story.
Should he have given back the money if he didn't use any money? Should he have given back the money?
He probably did. I think that the next chapter starts with, and after he gave back the money,
that's a good story.
When I read that story, because it happens so often that you're wondering, gee, how did he do this, and why did they do this, and how are they living? And then the truth is, you don't know the first thing about people. You don't know what's going on behind the scenes. You never know.
What would your opinion be on
those tapes are like $3 or $4 and you buy extra more?
If you have a
30 or more,
where you have one or two and you have a bunch that are very, very questionable.
Oh, okay.
Is it acceptable? And you know that the good rebbeim are hectoring certain things. Hypothetically, there's a restaurant, and the good rebbeim are hectoring the restaurant. But it has the bad. It has the hecture on it. It also has questions.
You've got to know under in each individual circumstance. You've got to know. I hope you're not reporting.
No, I'm fast forwarding this.
Sure. Under each condition, has to be examined. You've got to know who's involved. You can't. There's no general answer. Yes, sir.
Larry, I'd like to get a if
you buy 30 T-shirts, they'll take two books.
And there's a few of them by different people, and I'm wondering which one is best for someone who's got very little background. I see
so you can get a.
I would recommend for somebody with limited background. Usually the Rabbi Katz takes over. Rabbi Katz takes over. Rabbi Gottlieb takes over. You just got to pick the right subject. This Rabbi Molesky, I find, is
all the
lectures.
Yes.
Molesky is incredible.
You can buy the tapes.
His tapes are
delivered
tremendous amounts of game. Otherwise, they'll add $3 or $4. He's got clarity in both subjects. A lot of my material comes from.
So it's basically $1 you pay for a blank page.
Well,
that's how much you can look at.
Went to their house, returned the wallet.
You go?
And then the next day at school, I just called to the principal's office. Oh, but the parents of that family are there. They accused us of having stolen the wallet.
Really?
And then feeling it. And then returning it.
What did you do?
Then we told the story. Oh, yeah.
They were missing. If I give you back your wallet, I thought you were going to tell me he sent you home and then he chopped the wall.
Rabbi Kaplan?
Yes.
Should we be less judgmental? Can you differentiate between those who are more pious than others? As to how judgmental you can be?
Yes. That's difficult because you never really know how pious somebody is. But based on external actions, you've got to decide based on the person's external actions how pious he is or isn't. And so based on his external actions, then you have to decide, all right, he fits a certain category. Now I've got an obligation to give him the benefit of that, even if it looks questionable. I'm sure a lot of people have been nailed in, you walk into a non-kosher restaurant, somebody sees you. Hey, what's he doing in there?
Yeah.
I'm going in to ask directions. I'm lost on the highway or something. Yeah.
Shouldn't other religious Jews realize that if you're in there, it's for a cope or something.
People argue that way. Maybe that's true. Maybe your evil inclination has gotten the better of you. Maybe everybody else's, they've sold over a billion burgers, right, or 20 billion burgers, right? You're dying to try one. You know, they look, frankly, they look pretty good. The commercial on TV that killed me was one of the steakhouses, Ponderosa. There was a commercial for Ponderosa. At the end of the commercial, they said, if you've seen this commercial and you don't want Ponderosa steak and you're not hungry, right? They had this Ponderosa. It looked great, right? You know, there's a Yitzhara, whatever.
Have you been kosher all your life?
I've been kosher all my life.
Because I've eaten stuff and it's not that good.
My parents get strictly kosher. It's not that good.
The cut of meat is bad. It just doesn't taste as like.
You can't sell a billion burgers, whatever they've sold.
They
just
don't taste that good. Believe
it. Is it real cow meat?
Yeah, and then afterwards you feel all slimy and greasy. It's disgusting.
Are any of the fast food burgers good? They must be.
Wendy's is pretty good.
Really?
Yeah.
What, they're better than burger than McDonald's?
Definitely. It's just they don't have the name. They don't have the advertising behind them.
Everyone knows the old man.
Also, they don't have 30, 40 years. You know what I'm saying? They're not as... McDonald's is like one of the leaders of, you know, the first real fast food place.
I just read in a nutrition book that... I just read a couple days ago. I got a nutrition book at home that said that the McDonald's burgers are surprisingly high in quality as far as the meat. That could be that, you know...
They might be, but after you eat them, they're fried. So afterwards, you chew all...